Blog Talk Radio.
Like the folks you meet on, like to plant my feet on the Brooklyn Bridge. What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge. I love to listen to the wind through her strings, song that she sings for the town. I love to look up at the clouds in her hair. She's learned to wear like a crown. If you've been a rover, journey's end lies over the Brooklyn Bridge. Don't let no one tell you I've been trying to sell you the Brooklyn Bridge. All the folks in Manhattan are sad, 'cause they look at her and wish they had the good old Brooklyn.
Welcome again to House New York with Brooklyn real estate attorney Robert Howe. This week we're continuing our micro series on state planning 101. And this episode we're going to be looking at what it takes to prepare a will outline. And with that, I'm going to bring in our host. As always, once again, here's Robert Howe.
Well, welcome everyone to House New York. I'm your host again, Robert Howe. And as Jason mentioned, we are in the middle of a series of micro radio shows talking about wills and estates. And we came upon this idea just to do little snippets of ideas to get people to start thinking about doing this. Hopefully we'll touch on a lot of questions, you know, that people always have, but didn't know who to ask or were afraid to ask, and hopefully we will touch on a lot of those frequently asked or thought of but never asked questions. So tonight we're going to talk about preparing to see the attorney. So once you've made your decision, once you put off that procrastination that we all have and the dread that making something or doing something that involves us not being around anymore and having to take care of loved ones we're leaving behind, that's not really the most fun thought that you will have in a day. And human nature is such that let me put it off and worry about it another day. But the people who are listening to this show realize that that day has come. And today is the day to start acting and not just thinking about it. So, Jason, let me ask you, what are some of the things that you might be thinking about in either engaging an attorney or, if you did engage one, you know, meeting up with them and taking that first step towards making some wills or some trusts or estate documents?
Well, if I'm, the topic of our episode is going to be preparing an outline. So if I'm going to do a will punch list or a will checklist, just by the very nature of talking about a will, obviously the first thing that comes to my mind is beneficiaries. Who do I want my will to benefit?
The 2 points you made, sort of a questionnaire punch list, that's really very important. And a subset of that is who do you want as your beneficiaries, and we'll talk about that in a second. But first, yes, so I look upon a visit to your lawyer much like we look upon visits to our doctors nowadays. So you walk into a doctor's office, and since insurance is paying the doctor pennies on the dollar. That doctor wants to be in and out with you and see the next person within 10 or 15 minutes of them coming in the exam room. And so what I've done and I know a lot of people are doing is they're making up a list of questions that they will have when they see the doctor. Rather than have your 15 minutes, they say goodbye to you, you make another appointment, and then as you leave and are heading somewhere, say, geez, I didn't ask the doctor about this or that question. I meant to do that. So the one thing, however, lawyers don't give, they do give you more than 15 minutes, unlike a doctor. There's much more we have to, well, I guess we both professions have to flesh out a lot of information. Lawyers do tend to give a lot more time to their clients to really understand what they want to achieve. But probably one of the first things you want to do is make up a little bit of a checklist of all those things you always wanted to ask but never were in the right situation to ask. And so probably the first thing you want to consider is you want to contact an attorney who has some experience in this area. Now, attorneys, not unlike doctors, don't do everything. They don't practice in every field. Doctors go to other doctors when they need one, and lawyers go to other lawyers when they are in an area of law that they don't practice. And the same is true here. You want to contact an attorney who has some experience in drafting wills and helping people talk about their estate and helping, you know, people plan for their estate. And there's really no harm in asking the lawyer, you know, what percentage of your practice do you, consist of, you know, will drafting and estate planning and discussion like that. And you just want to make sure you don't end up with a lawyer who concentrates in a totally different area of law and really is not too familiar with this, with the area of wills, trusts, and estate planning. And then probably the second thing you should end up doing is one of them, jump to it right now, is, beneficiaries. A will and estate planning and trust is nothing more than thinking about when you're not around and who to leave your property to. And, you know, in this world, it's a little complicated. We probably have spouses. We have children. Spouses may have, different needs, different concerns. Children, different needs, different concerns. If you're a single person, you know, then you really have to decide what you want to do with your property. Do you want to leave it to friends? You want to leave it to nieces and nephews? You want to leave it to charities or your church or religious organization? Those are all viable, you know, groups to leave your property to. But you have to give it a little thought. And you'd be surprised how many people come in to my office and say, you know, I really didn't think about who I wanted to leave my property to. And that's sort of difficult to understand because that's the reason they came in to see me in the first place. But be that as it may, but maybe the more often scenario is they may have thought of who to leave their property to, but they didn't think of the next level in the event that person who they left the property to predeceases them and is no longer around. So I know when I ask the clients that question, many of them have a blank look because they haven't thought to that second level where the person is not around. And so if you're leaving property to, you know, relatives, you would probably end up saying, look, if my nephew or my cousin is not around and they have children, then let's leave it to the children because I do want to benefit my cousin or my niece or my nephew. And probably if they're not around, I'd also want to benefit their children. But if you don't have relatives or close relatives and you're just leaving it to a friend, if that friend is not around, where do you want that bequest to go? If they don't tell you, then the bequest goes back into the pot, and whoever else is named in the will shares, you know, that person's interest. It doesn't go to their children, unless, of course, you specifically, you know, mention it. And what we try to do to focus our clients, because, you know, I understand that this is a big deal for them, probably the first and only time that they've seen a lawyer to talk about this topic. So it's not something that is on the tip of their tongue or the top of their mind, you know, to make decisions. So what we end up doing is we send out a questionnaire to them ahead of time to kind of focus them. We ask information about spouses, children, parents, anybody with special needs. We ask about who they would want to be the business manager of the estate. That's usually called the executor. That person is charged with running the estate once, you know, the testator is no longer around. So we find that this questionnaire really focuses our clients to think about, you know, who they want to benefit. Not only think about who they want to benefit, but they have to give us specific information. So we ask them, you know, write down your spouse's full name, your children's full name, their ages, and things of that nature. If the people are not their immediate family, but their relatives, nieces, nephews, cousins, we say, okay, not only do we need their contact information and their names, but we need their addresses also, because many of the documents that we prepare, you know, call for addresses also to be attached to them. And this gives us an opportunity not to focus on, you know, writing people's names down. Did I spell it right? Did I get the right address? Or many times clients come in and they say, I want to leave property to my cousin, you know, in Idaho. Well, what's their address? Gee, I don't know. And so that's a little inefficient. It wastes a little bit of time. And beside wasting time, what happens sometimes is after a meeting, we may give a client a little follow-up work to do. And just getting back to this whole idea of procrastination, it took them a lot of energy just to come into the office to do this questionnaire and to come into the office and then actually follow through. But now you're telling them, go home, get this information, and get it back to me. So that's a whole different new set of inertia issues that pop up. And we have a handful of files that people just never get back to us. Either they don't want to think about it, or they can't decide, or they want to put it off. So the questionnaire serves a pretty good purpose. We try to capture as much information as we can at that initial meeting without sending them home with a lot of unanswered questions, a lot of unanswered, you know, decisions. Also, you know, what we find out sometimes, one of our questions is, does anybody in your group of beneficiaries have any special needs that they might not be able to accept this money, but may need a different vehicle in order to, you know, benefit by any bequest you want to make. You know, everybody's aware that if you give money to a person who is receiving social services, many times that could knock the person off social services. So what would happen is they get the money and they get knocked off social services. They have to spend the money, then they have to go on social services. So you really haven't achieved much other than let the government off its responsibility, you know, of caring for you know, that person. One thing also in trying to capture this information is you want to make sure you don't have any conflicts of interest. Conflicts of interest are a bugaboo for attorneys. You know, we're prohibited from representing two sides of the coin. We have to represent one side or the other. And you probably don't want to represent, you know, somebody. If you did a will for a woman, and then a man comes in later on and we find out he's divorced from that woman, that would be a conflict. You really can't, you know, represent both of those people. So you just want to make sure that, you know, there are no conflicts. And we also, during our, you know, also in our questionnaire, we ask them, beside a will, are there other things that you want to talk about? And one is a power of attorney. Power of attorney is an important document for while you're alive. It's financially, related and deals with what happens if you're alive but you're not able to make decisions or, do things on your own. Power of attorney, the person you appoint as the agent, is able to do, you know, that work on your behalf. The other issue that we ask about is would they like a healthcare proxy? Healthcare proxy is like a power of attorney, but powers of attorney deal with money and talking to institutions. Healthcare proxies, meanwhile, just talk about relaying to the doctor in the hospital in the event that the person who made the will is not able to answer those questions themselves. It allows the doctor of the hospital to ask somebody, who would make decisions in the event the person is unable, you know, to make their own. So those are, you know, some of the things that the information we want to either discuss or capture. And probably the last thing we want to, you know, discuss or capture is what the person making the will owns. And now we ask that question not to be nosy, but one of the requirements a lawyer has in making a will is we want to make sure that the person making the will knows the size of their estate. So if a person comes in and says, you know, my estate is worth $10 million and it's really, they don't have a penny in the bank, that sort of indicates that this person may not have the requisite, you know, testamentary capacity, you know, to make a will, that they're delusional. So we do ask them what the size of their estate is. And then the second question we ask is whose names, if any, are on those assets. So many times a client will come in and they might say, I have $1 million, but I have my sister's name on it, I have my kids' names on it. So as we discussed in an earlier show, if you have other people's names on your assets, either as joint owners or payable upon death or A and B, that's really not controlled by the will. So we want to get an idea of what the size of the estate is and how those assets are titled. And once they have that questionnaire completed, we'll make an appointment for them to come in, but at least we know that we focus them on what's important, that we capture the information that we need to prepare the will and or have a productive conversation. And it just makes the meeting that much more efficient and fruitful in terms of understanding what the client's needs are. So that really is, briefly what clients should do before they meet up with a lawyer to have the best possible meeting and, be focused on what they should ask and what they should give and what they should know about estate planning, wills, trusts, and other document drafting. I'm wondering, Jason, if you have any questions or have I explained it 100% to your satisfaction?
As you have, as always, I did have a question, but I preface it with, I often joke with friends that identity thieves, well, if they steal your identity, they should assume all your debt. Is that the same case in a will, like if someone is left your assets, do they also get left your debt?
Well, yes. It would be nice if it wasn't, but you know, the first part of just about every will says, I have to pay my taxes and my debts, and everything left over is I give to A, B, C, and D. So, you know, the most common is if you give a house away, and that house has a mortgage, or if you don't have a house, if you just have bank accounts, but you have either notices from the IRS of unpaid taxes, or letters from credit card companies telling you that, you know, you have an outstanding balance, the executor, the fiduciary, is obliged to clear up all your debts before giving money out, you know, to the the beneficiaries. So no, you cannot give the gift without the and so right. I owe. Yes, but no, one goes along with the other, unfortunately, and you know, that old saying, what's the two certain things in life are death and taxes, and it should be a little broader than that. Taxes, debts, mortgages, car payments, things like that. That all goes, with the good stuff.
Well, I think that brings us to the end of our micro episode on preparing the will outline, and I know we've got more in this series coming, so stay tuned for those, and we'll let you know when the next one is set to air.
I think the logical next micro session will be what actually happens in that session with the lawyer, when you were about to sign your will, and I'll leave it at that without telling too much more information about it. And so this concludes tonight's radio program. Thanks to Blog Talk Radio for hosting our show, and Jason for coming up with this idea of these micro sessions. This is How's New York signing off. God bless Brooklyn and all of its people. Wishing you a good night and a good morning and a good afternoon. I am your host, Robert Howe.
What a lovely view from heaven looks at you from the Brooklyn Bridge.